Okay, I unmuted back. Thank you, Natalie. Thank you, first of all, to our sponsors of our member meetings, which is AT&T Tennessee, Delta Dental of Tennessee, and Elliott Davis. We really appreciate their support in bringing these meetings to you all. John Rose grew up in Cookeville in Putnam County and is a lifelong resident of Tennessee's 6th Congressional District. He and his wife, Chelsea, continue to live in Cookeville with their handsome young son, Guy. John Rose worked with his father on their family farm in the Temperance Hall community in DeKalb County, and they've had that farm for, I believe, 200 years, John. John graduated from Tennessee Tech with a bachelor's degree in agribusiness economics. He went on to complete his Master of Science in Agriculture Economics at Purdue University and his Juris Doctorate at Vanderbilt University. John co-founded Transcender Corporation, which earned the Music City Future 50 Award 5 consecutive years before he sold it in 2000. Congressman Rose currently owns and is president of Boson Software, which trains IT professionals across the country. And we're proud to say he's an NFIB member along with Congressman Phil Rose. And John Rose also served as Commissioner of Agriculture in Tennessee. He is a true public servant. He is not in Washington to score political points, but to get the job done. And I think that's why members in the district are really proud of him. We're certainly proud of him for you know, having a very good first term. And on that note, before we ask Congressman Rose to share his thoughts, I'm going to turn this over to one of our great advocates in Washington, Courtney Brooks, and she's going to recognize Congressman Rose for his stellar support of small business. Courtney?
Thanks so much, and it's great to see you, Congressman. So NFIB's Guardian of Small Business Award is presented to members of Congress who truly vote as champions of small businesses. Congressman John Rose has a perfect score, 100% NFIB key vote score in his first term. Relevant to our discussion today, I want to thank Congressman Rose for opposing the Corporate Transparency Act. While this title sounds like it would be a good bill, instead this bill would add new beneficial ownership reporting burdens on small businesses. During the pandemic, Congressman Rose also championed vital financial assistance and flexibility for small business owners. These are just a couple of NFIB's key votes for this Congress. NFIB asks lawmakers to support the consensus views of our members based on NFIB member ballots and backed up by NFIB Research Center surveys. Small business owners across the country need more support now than ever before, and we are grateful to you, Congressman Rose, for your leadership. Congressman, congratulations and thank you, and I'll turn it over to you for comments.
Got to unmute, Congressman. Congressman, we need you to unmute, please, sir.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Thank you.
I have yet to fully master all the different conferencing systems, so this one I haven't been on Teams in a while, so my apologies. Thank you, Ms. Brooks, for that honor, unexpected, but appreciated. And I will tell you, and I know I don't have to tell Jim Brown this, but, you know, happy to support our small businesses in the actions that we take in Congress. And most of the time don't even, thankfully, and Gary Floater will appreciate this, most of the time I don't have to actually ask myself, wonder what NFIB thinks about this, because I almost always instinctively am going to, I think, come down where you all would be anyway, although we do look at that. And so I applaud you for advocating on behalf of our small businesses all across the country. And it's important, and you should never be shy about doing it, because it's how, you know, business gets done, and it's how representatives in the government like myself know and stay tuned in with what we should do. As Jim Brown indicated, I'm a multi-generational Tennessean. I'm the 8th generation. Our little boy Guy is the 9th. We have a family farm that's been in the family actually for 230 years.
Wow.
almost as old as the Constitution, and very proud of that legacy and hope that Guy will continue it. I do operate and continue to operate a small business here in Tennessee, based here in Tennessee, and actually just across the street from the NFIB headquarters. We've gotten to experience everything that other small businesses have throughout this year, and obviously on an ongoing basis. And so that is very important, frankly, in helping me understand, you know, how I should respond to the challenges and the opportunities that we see in Washington. So thank you for that honor. I can go on, but I'll pause here because you all may want to ask me questions, or you may have something you want me to focus on in particular, Ms. Brooks or Jim. So I'll pause here and give you a chance to direct what else I say.
Yeah, well, we had our thank you, Congressman, in 230 years. That's amazing. We had our D.C. fly-in a couple of weeks ago, and I know our schedules couldn't match up, but we talked about several issues that I know you're really looking at very closely. The next round of relief, what does that look like? The Corporate Transparency Act, obviously, you've hit on in the NDAA. That's a big issue for our members. But Courtney, do you want to maybe lead us through? I know Justin Crossland has indicated he wanted to ask a question about some of the issues that we've already talked about a few weeks ago. Do you want to give us a little bit of an overview, Courtney, and maybe you can let Justin come in here with a question?
Sure, that sounds great. So, Congressman, unsurprisingly, our members are looking for another round of financial assistance. Our survey tells us that within the next 12 months, about 50% of our membership will need another round of PPP or something similar to keep them afloat. So we're really curious what that next round looks like. I think all of Washington is curious what that looks like, and you hear all the news reports, but we'd love to hear your perspective. And additionally, the tax treatment of the forgiven expenses through PPP is a big issue for our members. When that IRS notice came out in April, one member described it perfectly. She said it was a sucker punch. You know, I wasn't expecting that. That wasn't part of the rules, and we thought Congress wanted this to be helpful for us getting back on our feet, not tax us on the back end. So those are two of our big priorities, and with your position on financial services, you're well-versed in the Corporate Transparency Act. We know that was attached to the NDAA, so we're watching that with caution, making all of our advocates aware that happened in the House. The Senate, it was not attached in the Senate to the NDAA, but we're watching for that conference bill to see what that looks like. And with that, Justin, would you like to ask your question?
Yeah. Thank you, Courtney.
Sure.
Justin, if you'll unmute, I think you're hearing about this issue a lot at your CPA firm. You're still muted. There you go. Fire away, Justin. I think he's having audio issues. What he might want to do is just type it into the chat if there's an audio issue there, and we can get to it. But what I heard from Justin yesterday, Congressman, is he Crossland, which is a great CPA firm here in Nashville, has some business, I believe, a lot of business up in your district. The tax treatment is the issue, and if he can type in anything specific, we'll get to it. But I think that's what he's hearing. There's other CPA firms that are on our tax advisory council, same issue. They're hearing from a lot of small business owners that this was a backdoor tax increase, the IRS treatment. Congressman, you there?
Yes. I'm sorry. I thought we were waiting on Justin. So
yeah, we can look at it when it gets typed in there.
Okay.
I don't see it yet.
Okay. Well, you know, so if I'm in, and forgive me if I'm missing the issue precisely, but I think what we're talking about is that when we passed the CARES Act, we made it explicit provision that we didn't want to see the benefits be taxable. But then the IRS comes along in Treasury and they say, well, if it's a forgiven, normally, obviously, a debt forgiven would be taxable. I think all business people know that. And so the IRS and I thought the statute was very clear, but the IRS takes the provision of, well, if you paid an expense with resources that you were given essentially as a grant, then you can't also expense those. And I've heard Secretary Mnuchin explain this, and probably anyone who's been following this issue closely has heard his explanation. And their argument is, well, you know, if we make the proceeds of PPP and the other programs, if we make those non-taxable, and then we also allow you to expense the expenses that you incurred, that you paid with those, with the proceeds from a PPP loan, then technically you're getting to double dip. That's one of those things that's a little bit tough to wrap your head around, frankly. But I thought we made it clear we don't want this to be taxable. And so the Treasury Secretary, you know, obviously doesn't see it that way. The IRS doesn't see it that way. I'm not sure how much energy there is in Congress for us coming back and putting our finger on that and saying, no, we said not taxable. We meant not taxable. And so you can't use this sleight of hand that you're using to work around the congressional intent. And so, you know, that's my view of the issue. And yes, okay, maybe I can understand the argument that you're essentially getting to deduct an expense that you paid for with grant funds. But we, again, made that clear. So to the extent that it is a double dip, if that's even a fair characterization, it's one that Congress intended. And heaven knows we need as much assistance. So we'll continue to bear down on that. I didn't get a chance the last time Mnuchin was talking to our committee, I don't believe, to really address this issue, but we'll continue to do so. Y'all, I don't want to take a lot of your time talking about things that you don't want to talk about, but obviously the environment in Washington right now is that the Democrats want this huge program that, you know, is really kind of outlined by the parameters of the HEROES Act, $3+ trillion. Some of it is coronavirus relief funding, but much of it is just funding an assortment of Democrat and progressive wish list items that would not be good for small business, would not be good for the country, and certainly is not good financially for the country in terms of the cost of the program. So my own position is that we need targeted relief, and heaven knows your members know this. The interesting thing about the impact of the government imposed shutdown around coronavirus is that it has created a season of feast or famine for small businesses and businesses alike across the country. So fortunately, there are some businesses who are enjoying the best year they've ever had. And you probably have members, perhaps some listening to this call, who are fortunate to be in that situation. On the other hand, we have businesses at the other end of the spectrum who have been completely devastated. They've seen, in many cases, close to a 100% stop in their revenue because of the imposed shutdown. I was just visiting with a group of businesses that are in that situation yesterday that service the entertainment industry and provide transportation services for entertainers and for travel groups and that sort of thing. And so their industry has just been shut down 100%. And really, they have no visibility even yet as to when they're going to be able to get back up and going. And so those businesses clearly need help. And so we are advocating for that. We've signed on to some bills that provide that would provide specific support to specific industries. But I think ultimately the best solution would be to fashion a program that is aimed at helping businesses that have seen a remarkable reduction in their revenue because of the government-imposed shutdown.
Yeah, you hit on a lot of very hot topics around this this pandemic and the relief that's needed, Congressman. Justin did put in his question. Courtney, can you see it? And then I wanted to follow up with you, Congressman, on a few things you said after Courtney looks that over. But I think it hits on the urgency. I think he's hearing more as they're coming up on their quarterly payments and the deductibility of those expenses. I think that's where just what Justin is hearing a lot from many of their clients. Even as we have many clients asking about the deductibility of the PPP expenses now that we are coming up on another quarterly payment, this is being asked even more now as many are struggling to pay the taxes because they use the funds to keep people employed rather than hold back some for the taxes. So the we really appreciate the support. We had a good conversation with Congressman Green about this same topic, and we would ask for energy behind this when this comes up, please. It would be helpful.
And
sure.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just looking. I was just reading Justin's question, and I think I've already probably addressed how I feel about it. But I think it does raise another interesting dilemma that unfortunately many businesses face, which is that we, you know, when we set out the rules of Paycheck Protection, the anticipation clearly was this was going to be an 8-week or 2-month event. It's obviously turned into much more than that. And as a result of that, frankly, we've kind of punished those businesses that took the Paycheck Protection loan and used it the way that Congress essentially initially intended it to be used. So if you followed those rules and you kept your payroll intact, you didn't let anyone go, and you used the PPP proceeds that way, then suddenly we get to the end of that 2-month period and you've exhausted all of those resources. You've done what we wanted done, which is to keep your payroll in place, but then the economy, the shutdown of the economy continued longer than anyone anticipated. And so now, as a small business person, many of those small businesses, and again, I'm sure many listening today, then had to let their, then had to lay off their employees. Mm-hmm. And so not only did it at some level disadvantage the business, but it also disadvantaged the employees who missed out on some of the benefits that they might have enjoyed had they been laid off from the outset. And so it has created a real conundrum and a disparity in how businesses have been treated relative to the utilization of PPP proceeds. And so I think we need to square that. We need to fix that in any future legislation that we pass. At least that's my view.
Yeah.
We appreciate that, sir. And Congressman Holding in North Carolina has a bill, a bipartisan bill. It's about 38 co-sponsors or so. It's H.R. 6321. And I can send this to you and your staff as well, the Small Business Expense Protection Act. And so there is some support in Ways and Means, and we've heard Chairman Neal say this is one of his top priorities to correct it. So we're hopeful that if we have great voices like yours and our advocates just getting behind that effort, we would greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Courtney. Something you mentioned, Congressman, about the different sectors that are being hit hardest, and I'll echo what you said about entertainers and travel groups and bus tours of businesses. Had a lot of calls from event planners and wedding planners that are NFIB members, and we really appreciated the Governor Lee and that Fiscal Stimulus Accountability Group taking some of that CARES money into the Tennessee Business Relief Program. And these businesses I just mentioned were not on that first round, but you hit the nail on the head. They're a long way away from getting back to operating, you know, up to any speed whatsoever. They're basically grounded right now, and they're in deep trouble. So I'm very glad that you mentioned them, because they're parts of this economy in hospitality. The restaurants obviously are struggling, that should be at the front of the line, these smaller entities that are mom and pop businesses. So thank you for saying that. And I know Governor Lee and his team are in round two. They just added them, and they're aggressively trying to help them with small business grants. So Courtney, do you want to mention also the EIDL? The PPPL overall was a success. The EIDL has been challenging. But it's very important, and I've been talking to the governor's office about there are a few states like North Carolina that have done bridge loan programs, mm-hmm. and they're also EIDL kind of acts like that. So, Courtney, could you maybe just mention to the congressman what our position is on a relief program that's a loan program, since EIDL has been so frustrating?
Sure. That would, at this point, I think our members would be happy to see any relief. I mean, PPP is ideal because now they're used to dealing with that framework and it being forgivable. But in terms of, you know, EIDL, even the a great idea at first. Unfortunately, the execution was less than ideal. So if in the next round of relief, if that is something that is floated, we would hope that the SBA would communicate. You know, there was the idea of a $10,000 emergency grant, and then suddenly it was put to $1,000 per employee. And then there was a limitation placed on it. I think, gosh, was it $150,000 max loan when that was not what was designed to be? So if moving forward, if that is something that Congress would like to look at, making sure the SBA is capable and will communicate back with stakeholders like Congress or small business owners who are going through the application process, that would be incredibly helpful.
Well, I completely agree. Of course, as you all know, you know, as we were considering the CARES Act and trying to figure out, and minds greater than mine were working on this, you know, they ended up deciding to do PPP through small business, but involve the bankers. And frankly, that was a good thing that they involved the bankers, because had we depended on SBA, and I don't mean this to criticize SBA unnecessarily, but they just didn't have the capacity, frankly, to administer the program. And frankly, they've proven that they don't really have the capacity to administer the EIDL program at the level volume that was called for here. And so I think we've got to be mindful of that, as we move forward. And we haven't discussed it today, but I very much favor, you know, the proposals to make the paycheck protection loans grants for businesses, under a certain size. And I guess that can be debated about what that cutoff should be. I know 150,000 has been one of the proposals that's been circulating, and I would support that. I think, you know, again, we didn't know a lot about what was going to happen back in March, and so it's understandable that things had to evolve a little bit. But I think we know now where the assistance is needed, and that there is additional assistance that's needed. And it's very unfortunate that, frankly, that Speaker Pelosi and Minority Leader Schumer, in my view, are holding up, kind of holding further relief hostage. You know, and I would be interested in hearing from NFIB. There are probably, you know, 100 or more, 200 bills, I don't know, that focus on specific industries. I mentioned the motor coach industry, and there's a CERTS bill that I signed on to. I told the motor coach folks, I don't think that bill will pass, but I don't think it hurts to have it out there, because hopefully it will help inform leadership and all those at the negotiating table about the kind of aid that's needed and the industries that need that help. I tend to believe that figuring out a way perhaps to work through PPP or a grant program of some sort that's aimed at businesses, again, I think I said earlier, based on the those who have seen a dramatic decline in revenue as a result of this, of the government-imposed shutdown. I think that's what makes sense. And so it certainly would welcome your input about specific bills that we might need to support and a specific framework that you all think would be most helpful in remediating the harm that's been done.
Mm. Sure, and to that end, PPP, it had its hiccups at the beginning. I think we all heard and experienced the hiccups. But now that it's up and running, we're hearing from our membership that they understand how to use it. The next thing is forgiveness. And so you mentioned the auto forgiveness for the loans under $150,000. There's a lot of interest with our members. Every week, NFIB's research center and legal team host a webinar every Wednesday at noon. We've had between 5,000 to 10,000 attendees every week. This past week with forgiveness, we heard from a lot of folks that they were deeply concerned by making one mistake on the application and then voiding the forgiveness. So that's where they are now. But we do like the PPP framework. We would like to see another round. We are very sympathetic, as you said, for the industries that have been shut out. We're very supportive of Chairman Rubio in the Senate, his efforts. However, the 50% threshold that he initially floated, we thought was far too high. To show that you've had a 50% revenue loss is just too high. Because if you had a 48% revenue loss, you've experienced significant loss. So we are looking for something. He's lowered that to 35%. We wouldn't mind seeing it even lowered further. So we appreciate that. We want to make sure the small businesses who are truly suffering are the ones that have the chance to get that next round of PPP. But we want to make sure it's not, you know, the barrier of entry is not too high, if that makes sense.
Sure.
In terms of specific bills, I'm happy to chat with you and your staff when we wrap up the call to tell you and send you letters of support we have issued.
Okay. I'm curious about the Restart Act and your opinion about it.
Sure. And that's gotten a lot of interest. But for us, we have not endorsed the Restart Act. We are concerned the number of employees is so high. It's for, we think, larger businesses rather than our universe of NFIB members. Additionally, the forgiveness, we thought the formula was kind of wonky. And we said as much to Senator Young's staff. We want to make it as straightforward as possible, seeing that our members are already so worried about PPP forgiveness, but now they're getting the hang of that. We don't want to have another program with another forgiveness apparatus.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Yes, sir.
Simplicity. Small business needs simplicity right now. More than ever, they are swamped with these calls. I think more than 50,000 people, different people have been on these weekly calls that we've been hosting. So, and it speaks to the complexity. They're trying to do this right and stay out of trouble while they're trying to keep their business open. It's, I think we've all had enough of 2020. Courtney, let me stop here. There may be a member. I see Brent, Gary Floater, Hugh Morrow just hopped off the call. He had a question, but Gary Floater may have a question. Brent Johnson up in Jamestown. If y'all have a question right now is the time. But I do have another question for Congressman Rose about an issue that's percolating that could be really big next year. Anybody? Gary, are you good? Brian,
yeah,
you're good?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Gary.
Well, I'm just trying to wrap my arms around that, you know, Courtney brought it up about this National Defense Authorization Act and the Corporate Transparency Act amendment. I'm trying to understand what's going on there and what was the purpose behind that and how the added burden to small businesses is beneficial.
Well, sure. And as you all know, I voted against the NDAA and that causes, you know, frankly, that caused me and our staff a little bit of indigestion. You know, I mean, you obviously don't want to be not supporting the measure that I think fulfills the government's number one obligation, the federal government's number one obligation, which is to protect the country. But of course, the Democrats in the House saw fit to burden that bill with a lot of extraneous initiatives that had nothing to do with the country's defense. And so, it makes me feel very icky, like the swamp. Because, you know, you vote against something that is critical to the country with the hope that the Senate will fix it and send it to conference and that they'll work this out and that we'll get a chance to vote on a cleaner Defense Authorization Act. But to Mr. Floater, to get to your question about these regulatory burdens, and I've spoken about this and listened to folks on the other side talk about the various things that they want to have businesses report on in the Financial Services Committee, and probably can go find the tapes, and I've kind of railed on them about the fact that they keep saying, you know, well, this one little extra piece of information won't be that much trouble, and we really need to know, you know, how many of these types of employees you have and you know, whatever the additional requirements are. And maybe, you know, in some cases you can concede that, you know, well, okay, that might be useful to know, but every one of these things comes, you know, number one, there's a reporting burden. And number two, there is the potential specter of what happens if you fail to report it or if you fail to report it accurately. And then what are they going to do to you? And obviously, as I see you sitting in your office there, you've got business to do. And the last thing you want to do is have to be trying to stay abreast of what else am I supposed to report? And so, you know, I just think that the burden or the threshold that needs to be met before you put any additional reporting or regulatory burden on a business needs to be very high. I mean, it needs to be overwhelming, and or we just don't do it. And even when we do it, and we've had some debates about this in the financial services arena, you know, they want this beneficial ownership reporting, and I'm sure you all have weighed in on this. And you know, my own view is, you know, you already file a tax return. That's the place where you could provide that information without any additional undue burden. Why create another whole regulatory framework, another whole agency or department within government, and create another whole form? It's just a trap for the unwary. And you know, the excuses that we get back is, well, you know, the IRS doesn't want to, you know, they don't want to be, you know, involved in this. And it's like, well, that's, you know, that's their problem. You know, in the meantime, we shouldn't provide this information. And it's information on top of that, and I know I'm preaching to the choir. It's information that if the government wants it, they can go get it. It, mm-hmm. You know, they have legal process. If they want to know, Gary, if they want to know who really owns your business, they can go find that out. Why should they force every business in the country to take the energy and time and put themselves in the awkward position of having to report something which is available to them if they would just go seek it out?
True.
I've got my pom poms out right now on that one. That was I'm missing football, but they're out. That was very well said. And you know, up to 3 years in prison for this, and bad actors are not going to comply with this. Only good actors are going to deal with it. It's one of the worst bills that we've seen. Bryant Johnson up in Jamestown says he's good. He just wanted to say how much he appreciates Congressman Rose for all that he's doing for us. Keep up the good work. I saw Tom Arnold just join this meeting. He's got a construction company in Carthage, so welcome, Tom. But, Congressman, my question has to do with the PRO Act. I don't know if you remember the PRO Act back in February, and it's an off-the-radar issue that's not going anywhere in the Senate this year, but it's basically the wish list for the union organizations up there. And, you know, in Tennessee, you've heard that we are – along with the Tennessee Chamber, Beacon Center, and some other groups, we're advocating for putting the right to work law into our Constitution, which some people say, well, why would you do that? Well, in Indiana, a judge overturned their right to work law about 8 years ago. In Virginia, they just tried to repeal their 1947 right to work law. And in Tennessee, we're in good shape, but, you know, we look at our bedrock issues, income tax, no income tax, employment at will, right to work, those are critical to our success. That PRO Act would eliminate 27 right to work laws. It would establish card check, which would eliminate the secret ballot. So anyone could go into a business, get 50% signatures, and you are now organized. It's just a matter of how you're organized. It would adopt the ABC test that California has now, which would really make it difficult for folks to have that independent relationship, the freedom that a lot of people want and a lot of businesses want. And that's three of like 8 or 9 provisions, Courtney, that are just terrible for our country. This election goes a certain way, that's on the table. And so I know you may be hearing about this, you may not be, but this is a huge issue for NFIB and a huge issue for the business community in Tennessee.
Well, and I think, you know, unfortunately, and if any of you who've heard me speak around the district, this is just emblematic or a symbol of what we've spent the 116th Congress doing, is passing these far left progressive measures that have no chance of becoming law, that are not really negotiated in the House, that the majority just pushes them through. I don't remember I was trying to look there and cheat and look and see how the PRO Act, I'm sure I voted against it, but I'm assuming that it's got virtually no Republican support. And I vaguely remember all the different provisions. I mean, at some level, these bills are not even worth reading because, you know, they're not going to become law in the current Congress, in the current government. But you're so right to bring up this issue, because I think it's really a vivid illustration. If you think that a President Joe Biden is not something to be fearful of, then read the PRO Act and reflect on what that would do to your business and what that would do to businesses all across this country and pro-business states like Tennessee. Because if the Democrats get control of the if they get complete control of the government, then things like this will be made law. And my great fear is that you hear people say this is the most politicians always say this is the most important election in my lifetime, and or in the history of the country. That's they'll go that far. I think the president said that. I don't know that, you know, that's 231 years now. So whether this is the most important election in the history of the country, I'll leave to historians to sort out. Mm-hmm. But this election offers the threat of changing the republic beyond our recognition, is my fear. And if you're pro-business in this country, then you ought to be very careful in how you vote this fall and who you choose to vote for, because if some of these extreme measures become the law of the land, it will not be good for business. It will not be good for our country. It will not be good for the republic. It will not be good for the rule of law. It will not be good for democracy, our representative democracy. And so the PRO Act is just one of many that they've sought to pass and have passed on the House side. And thankfully, because the Republicans control the Senate, those bills never see the light of day on the Senate side, and they're not going to. And unfortunately for Democrats, if you're a Democrat or you lean Democrat, they have wasted their majority. They could have done they could have gotten a lot of things done over the last year and a half that would have been more to their liking than not. But instead, they've chosen to spend all of their time pursuing the president and pursuing hyperpartisan bills that have no chance of becoming law, purely for the purpose, apparently, of appealing to their base. And I think they should be held accountable for that, because they had the chance to influence the national debate in a direction that would have been more to their liking. But anybody who's been in business know, and I think of Gary as I look here, but I know Tom Earl knows this, and I know Bryant Johnson knows this. If you've been in business, you know that if you walk away from a negotiating table and you got everything you wanted, that probably means that the other guy messed up really badly, or that it wasn't really a fair deal. You should have probably left wishing you'd got a few more things, and the Democrats don't seem to understand that. So the folks across the 6th district who tell me, well, why can't you work with the other side? And I'm ready to work with the other side and would welcome that chance and probably would get criticized for doing it. But they haven't given us the opportunity to do it.
That's, again, well said. And I have a question about that, because you mentioned the swamp earlier. And I think everyone recognizes, whether you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, that it's swampy. And people are tired of it. And in Tennessee, we're one of, I think, 39 states that have a single subject requirement. And you just mentioned you got put in a very difficult spot with that NDAA, because you want to vote for it, but you know there's some harm in there, and it's not related to the NDAA. And so what we're seeing is you all can't really negotiate, because the way the thing is set up, it's just, here it is, and you got to vote. And that's so hard for y'all, and it's not right. And I'm wondering if you had conversations not only with your Republican counterparts about that being a reform, but some of your folks on the Democrat side that would work with you.
Well, sure. Of course, perhaps, I mean, to really deal with that issue probably requires a constitutional change, frankly. I mean, I suppose you could introduce it into House rules, and maybe if it became operating procedure, it would stick. But if it's not a constitutional change, then, you face the specter that at any given moment it could be that adhering to a single subject or germaneness requirement in legislation. I personally think, and I'm reticent to say this because I think the Founding Fathers did a masterful job with the Constitution, but maybe it was the single worst thing left out is that they didn't do that. And of course, that's asking them to think way down the line. A lot of countries have it. Tennessee has it. And we should have it at the federal level. It would it would eliminate a lot of the swampiness and a lot of the chicanery that goes on in Washington.
So friendly nudge, because I think you get that, is something to talk about when you're at the Chamber, Rotary Clubs, and the PRO Act. And Courtney, I can send it, or you're already going to send something to the congressman, but just our recap of the PRO Act, and when people are, you're looking for specifics about why a business owner should be concerned, no matter what party they're in, that's one of those bills that should get anyone's attention. Go ahead, Courtney.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. That was one of our key votes for this Congress, for NFIB.
And you get it. It's just something to take out there, and, you know, you've got such a big voice in your district. It'd be great. Courtney, I don't have anything else. We've had a very generous 48 minutes with Congressman Rose, and I don't know if anyone else wants to ask a question, but let me just stop there and see if, Tom, you came on. Tom Arnold, instruction.
No, I'm good. John knows that we appreciate him, and he's a neighbor and a friend, so thanks.
Good. And you're in Carthage, is that right?
That's correct.
All right. That's a nice area.
Glad to hear your voice, Tom.
You too, my friend.
Well, thank you so much. Congressman, I think we just ended here and just say we are so grateful, and it is an honor to work with you. And I'm so glad that Courtney was able to present the Guardian Award to you today. So well deserved. And please tell Chelsea hello. I remember seeing Chelsea in Ron Ramsey's office and in the Legislative Plaza, and when she was lobbying for a few years. And you outkicked your coverage, as we say, right?
That's right. And Jim, I'll say I did a Facebook Live. Somebody on the call may have been on that on Tuesday night. Couple nights ago, and I got in the middle of it, I got a question from Jim Brown about Paycheck Protection Program, and I thought immediately my mind turned to Jim Brown in Cookeville. I don't know if you've ever met our Jim Brown, used to be mayor of Allgood, and so I started answering the question, just assuming that Jim Brown asked the question, and then it dawned on me, it's like, well, it's Paycheck Protection, and Jim's retired. Well, maybe I've got the wrong Jim Brown. So I've actually never figured out which Jim Brown I was talking to. But I answered a question from Jim Brown about Paycheck Protection. So if that was you, I apologize if I identified the wrong Jim Brown.
I knew you were doing that Facebook Live, but that was not me. And there are like three or four Jim Browns that are friends of legislators. And apparently there's one that gets a little feisty with folks and isn't as diplomatic as maybe I try to be. And so there was a staffer that kept getting calls up in the Cordell Hull building that was getting calls from Jim Brown. And these two staffers were talking. And she goes, you know, I really like working with Jim Brown. And she said, really? You know, he's just so, you know, blunt and just. And so for like a year, this staffer just kind of didn't. She just wasn't very as nice to me as I thought she would be. And it's just, I guess, the curse of the name. But it was anyway, she said, I'm so sorry. You've been so nice. And,
it's well, our local Jim Brown is a dear, dear friend and supporter, but it might have been him because he can be a little blunt at times, particularly if he doesn't agree with you.
Yeah. Well, I guess we all just need to make sure the assumptions, we don't make those assumptions. And so that's just another reminder in this world of social media and the Internet. So, well, thank you, John, so much. And blessings to you and grateful for your service. Courtney, anything else?
Yes, sir. We really, really appreciate your time, our guardian of small business. And I will be in touch with you and Taylor after to send along what we discussed, the PRO Act and our other key votes. So thank you so much, sir.
Well, so now I have to ask, do I get like a little statue or something?
Yes.
Okay.
So this is your first one, so you'll get a little Minuteman statue whenever we're allowed on the Hill again. We will deliver it personally to your office.
Well, I'll look forward to that. Thank you for the honor and the recognition, though it's not necessary. Thank you in particular for your support, and folks like Gary Floater and Bryant and Tom are friends and supporters, and I appreciate your support, and I hope you'll never be shy. And I know Gary won't when you have something that you need to talk to me about or an issue you want to advocate for, don't be shy about reaching out.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yeah. And let's do some personal get-togethers once this COVID thing is figured out. We look forward to that.
We would enjoy that. Thank you.
Thanks. Take care. Have a great week. Great weekend.
Good to see you, Garrett.